OpenServe is more than just SA's largest telecoms infrastructure provider. It's the answer to new ways of doing business, a connection to cutting-edge technology and infinite possibilities. A connection to tomorrow. Connect with us at openserve.co.za.
This episode of the Tech Central podcast is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time. I'm Duncan MacLeod and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm at Telkom's head office in Centurion today to talk to Fernando Bojon, the head of the Telecommunications Investment and Promotion Agency from Mexico. Fernando, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Duncan. It's a pleasure to talk with you and your listeners.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. So you're down in South Africa at the moment. I presume you were attending the ITU event in Durban this week.
Indeed, I was at the ITU Telecom. It's an important event that happened to be at Durban. We'll learn and talk a lot in different sessions about some of the main issues in telecommunications. And as well, we have the chance to interact with many people from Africa, which is was part of our intention of building more networking with Africa.
I was having a look at your profile online, and you've been quite intimately involved with ITU for many years. Is that right?
Yes, indeed. I have chaired a plenipotentiary conference, and lately I chaired an expert groups for the review of the international telecommunications regulations, among other things.
All right. So I'm really excited to talk to you today, actually, because you have been intimately involved in the launch in Mexico of something called the Wholesale Shared Network, which is not dissimilar, as I understand it, to what the South African government is hoping to achieve with the so-called Wholesale Open Access Network, or WOAN. I think Mexico, if I'm not mistaken, was one of the first, if not the first, country in the world to look at creating a wholesale network like this in the mobile space to try to open up the market to more competition. Let's start by talking a bit about why Mexico went down this route. I know that the country has for a long time been dominated by one telecommunications player in the mobile market. That's America Movil, owned or controlled by the businessman Carlos Slim. How did Mexico end up with a telecommunications market where there was one very dominant operator?
Well, because basically we didn't have any limits for growth. So Mr. Slim's company grew because it had the possibility of doing so on up to 82% of market share of the mobile sector. So we were, as I told you, diagnosed with a problem of competition by OECD. And among other things, there were about 36 recommendations from OECD, and we implemented that through a telecommunications reform of a constitutional level, trying to achieve better competition conditions that will transform into better prices, quality of service and coverage to the people.
Why did you do it at a constitutional level, as a matter of interest?
That's very, very important. We did it that way because we were having problems on implementing asymmetrical regulation or dominance power declarations. For more than 10 years, the Competitions Commission tried to do so, but they were legally challenged, and every time they got back on their decisions. So there were a lot of decisions that were not sustained legally. We couldn't advance. Basically, this was transforming in, for instance, in a penetration margin of mobile broadband services of 22 lines per 100 subscribers. After the reform, nowadays we have achieved 67 lines per 100 subscribers and a price drop of more than 45%, which is very similar to what the OECD estimated as a monopolistic margin that we were having back in 2012.
So did Carlos Slim just beat the competition? Was he just better than them that he managed to rack up the sort of market share, or did he have first access to the market? How did this come about?
Well, he had first access to the market. We have a privatization in the 90s, and he's very good on competing and gaining territory with the rest of the competitors. So the rest of the competitors were not able to respond probably so fast to this to this kind of offer that Mr. Slim was having, first in wireline, and then afterwards he began very actively on going in wireless. Nowadays, the wireless market is bigger than the wireline market, so he has been good in competition. And what we have seen as well is when you are big and you don't have any limits, then you just tend to grow and grow and grow and expand. So we are trying to put some limits on that. There has been some asymmetrical regulation established by the regulator. And we are as well trying some other projects. One of them is the wholesale shared network to increase competition for other participants in the market, for new entrants, or even for SMEs to have access to a good quality telecommunications network.
So how many players do you have in the mobile market now, and what are their relative market shares?
Well, relative market share is about, for the main one, for Telcel, it's about 70 nowadays. Then it's very similar between AT&T and Telefonica. Probably Telefonica has a little bit more users. AT&T has a little bit more revenue, so they are very, very similar in the rest of the market. Saying it's one has about 17, the other about 14. So it comes and goes, but it all depends not only in users, but in let's say how much is the ARPU that they are getting. So AT&T gets better ARPU, and Telefonica has more users.
So it's not like the dominant operator doesn't have weak competition. I mean, these two other companies, Telefonica and AT&T, are two of the biggest, most well-resourced telecommunications operators in the world.
Yes.
But still, they're struggling to enter or to compete in this market where there's one dominant operator.
Yeah. Once again, we used to have 82% of the market, of market power from Telcel, and it has dropped to 70. Mm-hmm. So in a way, we are advancing. Not as much as we would want, but it also will be reflected in, then again, more services. So nowadays we have like a price fight. Now they have been trying to get more market by reducing price. But of course, the kind of competitors that we have nowadays in Mexico, like AT&T, for instance, is a new entrant. AT&T came into the market after the telecommunications reform in 2013, because we opened to 100% foreign direct investment. So that was one of the reasons that he decided to come into the market, and other things that were established at the constitutional reform, at the telecommunications reform.
All right, so you've introduced this package of reforms a few years ago now, and you created a wholesale a shared network, which I believe has been given exclusive access to the 700 megahertz frequency band. Why did you identify that band specifically? Why not divide it up between a whole range of bands, say some digital dividend spectrum around 700 or 800 megahertz, plus some at 2.6, maybe some at 3.5? Was there a specific rationale behind saying everything in 700 must go to this wholesale network?
Well, it was decided before, and actually this was even established at the Constitution. So it's a constitutional mandate to do it in the 700 megahertz band. Why there? Because we also link it with another project, which was the DTV transition and getting the first digital dividend at the band. So it was like getting the dividend and then put the dividend to work immediately. And we decided to put it to work into the Red Compartida project. Another alternative would be to have a part of a spectrum of 2.6 gigahertz band, but what we envisaged at those days when this was being, let's say, designed, we say this is part like an entry incentive for a new entrant. So we wanted a new entrant. We didn't want that there were the operators that were currently at the market, but we have a new entrant into the market. So the incentive was, you will get all the 700 megahertz band. We believe it's a very useful band, a band where you can get very low prices, low cost for deployment, lower than in 2.6. So that was the reason we got into 700. But after that, then for later acquisitions of spectrum, they will need to go into the common way of acquisition like the other operators. However, there might be some particular incentives like 30% lower of the offers at an auction to participate in it. So, for instance, what we have had in Mexico is the 700 megahertz was granted to the wholesale network, but before that, we had an auction in the 1.7, 2.1 gigahertz band, which was very useful to the other spectrum, and was won between América Móvil and AT&T. And after putting the 700 megahertz band, there was another auction in the 2.6 gigahertz band, and the wholesale network, the private party who is participant at the wholesale network had the chance to participate at that auction, but they decided not to. So that was a way in which they could have gained more spectrum, but they decided not to go into this auction. So I think I gave a long explanation. I hope I was clear.
Perfect. So how much network has been rolled out by Red Compartida so far? And does it have rollout mandates? Does it have to reach a certain population coverage?
Yes, it has. It has certain population coverage requirements. Those are established at the contract, at the PPP contract. To choose a private partner, we need an auction that was made in coverage offer. So let's say we established like a floor that should be achieved in any case, that was 85%. And then the winner was the one who was offering the highest coverage offer. And the winner was the one who gave 92.2% of the coverage. So we split this goal in multiple years. The contract was signed last year, just in January 2017. And since then, the project has been growing. We have achieved the first goal, which was 30% of coverage, which is equivalent to 36 million people of coverage. Nowadays, the rollout of Red Compartida has continued, and we are about 35% of the coverage, and we will be hopefully in 50% by June next year.
And the network that's been rolled out, is it a 4G network? Is it using multiple technologies?
Yes, there is as well a quality requirement at the contract that it has to be at least the latest LTE release that was available when the auction was presented. In this case, I believe it was release 11 or something like that. So they are between 11 and 13. They are doing the network that way to try to do it with the highest quality possible. And for us, that is very, very important to set the floor. But we believe that the Red Compartida will itself be if it's going to be successful, it has to be on a market-driven basis. So they will have to be offering better quality each time in order to compete with the rest of the market. So they will keep on growing, let's say, in a natural way without any help from the government in that regard.
Who are its shareholders?
Hmm?
Who are the shareholders in the business?
Shareholders are... Mainly, there is a strategic partner. The name is Multitel. They used to run a company whose name is Ono in Spain. Ono was sold to Vodafone, and they have a small share of about 3%. But as I told you, maybe there will be this presentation, and you will see all the details there of the exact percentages, because I may forget some of them. The other main shareholders are Morgan Stanley Infrastructure, who is over 36% of shareholding. It's a major shareholder, and it's the first time that they are investing in Mexico. And the other big one is the World Bank through the IFC, with more than 26% of shareholders. So Morgan Stanley and the IFC control about 60% of the shareholders. There are other pension funds, such as CDPQ from Quebec in Canada, and we have as well some Mexican partners. Those are like the financial investors. There are smaller shareholders from a couple of operators that are only able to participate, let's say, through putting fiber into this composition, but they don't have any control on the operation. For us, that was very important, because the intention behind Red Compartida is that no operator will control the network, because the intention is that the capacity is available for all the operators or any entrants, that there won't be any barriers of access.
Is the Mexican government an investor in it as well?
No, it is not.
Not at all. Not at all.
It is not. It has two levels of participation. One is through Promtel, who controls the contract, but it's more like a project manager of the contract. There is no shareholders in the society. It's a full private society. Now, the other way in which the government participates is by granting some loans. Now, the development banks of Mexico are participating on the loans given for the deployment of the network in about 30% of the deployment. At least 33% has to be from the equity from the shareholders, and there is another participation. Let's say the rest of the participation is granted through funds given by Huawei and Nokia, well, not Huawei and Nokia, but the China Development Bank and Finnvera from Finland, which are giving credits to Nokia and Huawei, which are, let's say, the technological partners of the network.
So are AT&T and Telefonica not invested in it?
In the Red Compartida, yeah. No.
What's the reason for that?
What's the reason for that? Mm. First, because they can't.
They're not allowed to.
They are not able to do that. Because once again, the intention is that no operator will have any sort of control within Red Compartida, so the capacity suffer for all of them. However, what we currently have, and that was, a recent development about a month ago, is that Telefonica has now hired the services of Red Compartida. So we are happy about that. We think that was something that was going to happen, but took some time to happen. The first goal and the first moment in which Red Compartida could celebrate contracts was since last March. March 21 was like the launching of the network. So when this happened, they began to sign some contracts, close some contracts. So the first contract was for fixed wireless of a new entrant, and then have been other contracts. Currently, we have 13 wholesale contracts, which are registered at the regulator, and one of the contracts is with Telefonica Movistar.
I see. Okay. So how's it been working so far? What impact has Red Compartida had on prices and competition in the Mexican market?
I still is very, very, very early to put a dimension to that, because once again, the launching of the network just began with a coverage of 32% in March.
Right.
So right now we are in the stage of closing and celebrating contracts. But we have seen some effects. For instance, America Mobile was closing their investments. They were not very open to invest, and they have recently do many changes in their network in order to produce carrier aggregation, use their capacity in 2.6 and other bands, and they are granting a service of high-speed wireless, so that they are increasing quality to the service. I believe they are advancing on trying to capture the users, not to run out from their network. We have as well another effect that we can see is that in the Mexican market we have about 40 million people that are not still connected to the internet. We're talking about a population of 120 million. So from these 40 million, the fixed wireless service is beginning to see as an option. Mm-hmm. So when Red Compartida was coming to the market, they were saying, well, an alternative is not only mobile wireless, but fixed wireless. And when they begin to say that, then all of the rest of the competitors begin to offer now fixed wireless services. And nowadays, having no offer of fixed wireless in February, now we have about six offers of fixed wireless. So we believe that will be as well good for the people to have more options to get connected to the internet. We still haven't seen the effect in prices. We will be following that. Actually, Promtel is measuring or trying to measure the impact of the project. It's by the end of the day, your question is excellent, because it's the end in which we're looking. What are the effects to the market? What is the benefit to the people? We are also doing these measurements together with the Inter-American Development Bank, which we have signed an agreement with them in order to share information and to be open about the involvement of about the deployment of the project and the impact. For us, that is very, very important because, you know, one of the risks of a public-private partnership, in my opinion, is the lack of transparency, you know, that sometimes the public party gets so involved that then they are extremely careful in the way that information is handled. So when we have like an international partner such as the IADB, the Inter-American Development Bank, and probably some other banks and funds which are coming to the project, we can share the information in a very transparent way. For instance, that has already been useful for a fund which is named CIF, which is getting into the project to get a loan of $50 million, and probably will be useful as well to get the Inter-American Bank into investing as well in the project. So we believe very much into transparency for it, and that is key to for the investors to see where the money is going and what are the possibilities of the project.
How much money is being invested in Red Competida?
Right now, it's not too much. It's in pesos. Let me think. No, sorry, $120 million.
Okay, and that's what's invested so far.
So far for the first stage of the project, 2,300 millones de pesos, no? 2,300 million pesos, about mm-hmm. about those numbers.
Okay, and so did you have
the project? I mean, sorry for that. Mm-hmm. The project has been dimensioned to be involved in an investment probably of $7 billion. Mm-hmm. So right now, that's why I said the initial amount is low. However, there is no commitment to get to that number. It's just a commitment of getting to a coverage. So if they spend less money, it will be good, no problem.
So if it doesn't work, I mean, have you set out almost conditions that say if we haven't achieved this by this date, then we need to rethink the model? What's your thinking around that? I mean, I suppose the risk with these things is always people get so invested in them that they can't see the wood for the trees, and when it starts to fail, they just keep putting more money into it. Is there a set of criteria that you've set down saying that, well, if we haven't managed to achieve this by this date, we pull the plug on this thing or sell the infrastructure to someone?
Basically, ever since the risk has been transferred to the private party, we are seeing that on the regard of the private party. So if there is a problem with the project, what will happen is that we will put penalties. So it's really when the investors see that there is no, if there won't be any return for the project, they'll need to drop out. There will be many, many penalties. We have already a trust where there are funds that are involving a guarantee of about $500 million and some other funds that are guaranteeing the deployment of the last part of the project. So there's a lot of money invested in the project. So what we want to see is that the private parties are really committed to the project in order to make it work. Now, of course, there are some conditions in the contract in the way that the project could be eliminated. But right now, what we're thinking is, first of all, the government won't help the project if it has problems. It has to be solved by the private party. Basically, what we think is that at least the Mexican government is not a very good entrepreneur. So the entrepreneurs are the private parties, and they are the ones concerned to make it work.
So you were in South Africa this week, I presume not just to attend the ITU conference. We're sitting at Telkom's offices at the moment,
yes.
And Telkom is a strong supporter of the wholesale open mm-hmm. access network. Are you consulting with Telkom and anyone else in South Africa during your visit here?
We are. I mean, we have been requested to give information. We have been doing so. We have been open, as I am opening to you, and we have been sharing a presentation. Even it's a presentation I have on Twitter. It's the same information. We have talked with the regulator, with the government. I think they are interested in knowing what we are doing and why we have done the things in the way that we decided to. we don't think that this is like the cure for cancer. This, there is no universal medicine. This is the way that we have done it. So we have been open on sharing that with them. We as a government agency, let's say our nature is to share this sort of knowledge. So that is the reason that we are currently at Telkom, which has been very gentle on giving us a chance to talk with you and, of course, to talk with them.
Mm-hmm. So the model that you've come up with in Mexico, do you think it's exportable? Do you think that Mexico has a specific set of challenges that don't apply in other markets?
I think that in many ways it could be put like a role model, but it's something that you have really to go into the details, you know, to have the proper, let's say, adjustments or tweaks that would consider the particular situation of the country that would like to go into this sort of project. You know, it's like basically we're talking about network sharing. So if we're sharing a network, what we want to get is lower costs that would ease the deployment of infrastructure, such as ease the deployment of 5G services. So I believe the idea is very good. I believe we are not original. I mean, we are just too committed to the project and do it in a nationwide basis. But other people, such as the chairman of GSMA, have already mentioned that we need to find ways in which to share the resources of networks in order to lower the cost. Mr. Barti Mittal, for instance. People like McKinsey are saying network sharing could be a very good idea for in order to lower costs. So we believe we are putting this together and put it to work into a practical project. So having those things in mind, I think, yes, it's something that could be taken into consideration by countries who want to do it. But this is not something like a plug-and-play thing. And they really have to go into the details. Mm. How, if you want to do it through a public-private partnership, you want to auction the spectrum, what sort of a spectrum is going to be regarded to, what are the incentives, for instance, in rights in Mexico. We pay a right of use of spectrum. And in the case of the 700 megahertz band, the rights were dropped to 10% of the value that they were. And that was in accordance with Congress. So this is a nation's project, which we believe is going to give us chance to have better services or broadband by the end of the day to the population.
The shareholders in Red Competida, just from an operational perspective, you've obviously got to make some very difficult decisions about operational management, about technical choices around the network, that sort of thing. Was there a lot of disagreement, or did everyone kind of come together and say,
I can't really tell. Mm. I mean, because we as a government agency and as controlling the deployment of the network, we set like a floor of requirements of quality, and those are the requirements that we see. Mm-hmm. There have been some decisions on who are going to be the technological partners, such as Huawei or Nokia, but those are decisions of the private party. Let's say it's like a balance. What we wanted to get is a new entrant, a new network that is done under these principles, and in exchange, what we are granting the private sector is certainty for their investment, certainty that the government won't intervene in their commercial decisions or deployment decisions. So this is the way that we have been putting this together, and this is the way that it has been attractive for investors to come. Mm.
So the South African markets, we're looking at a WOAN. It's been very controversial. It's been very heavily criticized by the two big mobile operators, Vodacom and MTN. It's also been criticized by many industry analysts and research groups. It's been welcomed by the two smaller operators in mobile, Telkom and Cell C. I know we were talking just before we started recording, and you said you're not the expert on the South African telecommunications market, but just what you've seen in your time here and talking to executives at Telkom and other companies, do you think a WOAN or a shared wholesale network in the South African context is needed and warranted?
I really don't know on that part of how is the market. I think it would be a good idea to make a collaborative process in order to drop prices by sharing resources of a network. I think in that way, as I told you before, it could be like a good model, but it's a model where most of the operators have to come together and decide if they want to do it, or what are the goals from the government. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like Alice in Wonderland. Now if you go to a crossroad, and where do you want to go? So first thing is to know where do you want to go, what is the goal that you want to achieve. So once you answer that question, I believe then you can see if this is feasible for South Africa, and how could you do it.
In the Electronic Communications Amendment Bill, which is the piece of draft legislation which is going to allow for the policy framework to introduce the wholesale open access network in South Africa, the government is proposing that that the big operators buy 30% minimum capacity on the wholesale network in order to support it and to make it feasible. Did Mexico have any requirement like that on America Movil to buy capacity on this network?
No, we didn't do it that way. We believe it had to deal through a market-driven process, and that is a risk indeed on that, no? Because of course, when we were designing the project, and this has been done for many years, the project was established at the constitutional level, and since then we did a lot of discussing in how to do it. There were requirements of need to guarantee the demand. No, so one way was, as you mentioned, this way. We decided not to do it that way, in order not to be establishing price controls or establishing like quotas of demand for any supplier. So if it's going to be working, it's going to be driven by the market. So we didn't put any sort of requirements like that. I understand that is a possibility. But we were as well looking in ways in which the market could adapt to this project in a natural way.
Mm. Okay. And so are there, in terms of, you mentioned price regulation and wanting to avoid that. So are there any wholesale price requirements set by the Mexican regulator on?
What we have is that ever since there is a risk that, let's say, from the wholesale operator, somebody would come and get all the capacity, or at least sign the capacity and block other competitors, let's say, at least theoretically. We have conditions that, of course, this should not happen. So how do we do it in a practical way? We have a public offer of service, of wholesale services, and this public offer is reviewed by the regulator. Our regulator is as well the competition authority. So they basically look at things to guarantee that the offer is non-discriminatory and that it's transparent at the relevant market, which is the wholesale market. So the regulator controls the offer before it goes to the market, and then it, of course, it can react through the competition law. But right now it's working that way, and as I told you, we already have 13 contracts that are assigned and registered and beginning their operation.
How much interest have you had? Obviously, you've had interest here in South Africa, but from countries around the world that are looking at what you've done in Mexico and coming to see you and asking you to come to their countries and talk to them. Is this wholesale shared network idea one that's catching on around the world, or is it fairly limited still?
I believe that it's been of interest of some people, but sometimes people get a little bit disappointed when I tell them, well, it's because we are very strong and we see this project carry on because it is in the constitution. No? Mm. Some people say, well, do we need to change the constitution? Well, don't know, how is your legal framework? So if your decisions are going to stand through time, you need to build long-term commitments in order to guarantee that the project is going to be living. Otherwise, you have the risk that something like what happened in Australia for their fiber network could happen to the project when new government comes and then things shift. So in here we see a reform that is at the constitutional level that is providing results and that has, let's say, solid and fundamental basis. This solid and fundamental basis have been the ones that have made the market attractive for people such as AT&T to come into the market. So yes, there is interest by some countries, but you have to see that it's a long road. It's not a magical medicine. It's not something that you get off the shelf and apply. It's something that you really need to analyze, to see if this role model could be usable at any country. Yeah, we have had about 8 requests from different countries to learn about that. Mm-hmm. We had the chance to be here in South Africa because of the ITU Telecom. We as a government pay for this trip. It's not that Telecom is doing it. We just think ever since we are trying to learn more of what is happening in South Africa, we have been doing that through the ITU Telecom. And once again, it's not that we are selling anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk to Tech Central and your visit to South Africa. Fernando Borjon is head of the Telecommunications Investment and Promotion Agency, or better known as Promtel, from Mexico. Thank you so much for your time today, and all the best.
Thank you very much, Duncan. Pleasure to talk with you.